Musical intro.
Filip.
Hubert.
Why are we speaking English?
Because we can, and we are good at it, and we have a great reason for it.
And the reason is?
We have a guest. Thanks to the amazing people at the Animator Festival that just wrapped up in Poznań.
More or less.
We had the opportunity to meet some very cool, very talented people from abroad. And since they do not understand Polish, we had to practice our English skills. And that went so well that we had to just ask one of them kindly to maybe please be a part of our podcast.
Oh, you played it really nice, because I thought you were going to say we made a lot of talented and great people. And we also met this guy.
Why are we talking English? It's because the guy missed the how to speak Polish class.
Okay, guys, the guest already spoiled the surprise. Mark Silk is with us here.
And he's the guy with 1,000 voices or 1,000,000 voices. I don't know. But if you have played any game ever or have seen any cartoon ever or maybe perhaps are acquainted with a tiny teensy little movie, episode 1, Phantom Menace. You have heard him talk.
And hopefully you're going to hear him talk today all about it and other things that are interesting, hopefully, to us and to you. So without further ado, Mark, say hi.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon.
Oh, you know how to do it.
Well, right off the bat, you can tell you got this.
Depending on time zone.
Yeah, you got this, you know, the radio voice. How do you do it, man?
I just watched your podcast again and again and again. I listen and think, well, how does Hubert do it? What's Philip's secret? And then I do the opposite.
I mean, you're the guy with the experience. We're just, you know, leeching off of your fame. But since we got a chance to talk on stage and between events at the festival, we're going to repeat some of the questions. Some of the stories you've told us are very cool, and we hope to hear them again.
It's not like he told it the first time on the stage. Like, we ask the same questions that everybody does, right?
I know, but still, the thing we didn't get to talk on stage was the Star Wars thing, and we want to begin with the Star Wars thing, if that's okay with you.
Anything.
We can start with Star Wars, but I think we should start with Mark. Who are you as a person?
I'm just a little man from England who enjoys fish and chips and visiting the Queen.
She's dead, you know?
She doesn't mind.
This podcast was recorded 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's 2020.
God bless His Majesty. We like to visit the King.
I mean, you hear him. He has the voice. He has the voice, and he's been using it for years. But the first question, it's super simple. How does one get a job voicing a character in Star Wars?
Well,
sheer dumb luck.
Like, that should be what's on the business card. Sheer dumb luck.
Or your autobiography.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the autobiography should be George Lucas offered me crisps. George Lucas offered me potato chips. That's the autobiography. Well, the question you asked was, how did I get the job on Star Wars? So I started out as a sound guy, a sound designer in radio. So I was the button guy. I was there on the mixing desk. I was directing and producing other people. And kind of, I was the behind the scenes guy. And my heroes were always people behind the scenes. You know, the thing that I watched the most as a kid was the making of Star Wars on VHS.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went from being a good sound guy to getting a good reputation as a sound designer. But then over time, I needed voices for projects I was working on. So I taught myself. I've got no actual formal training. You can probably tell. And I taught myself by watching people who I thought were brilliant. So, you know, and a lot of it was watching like behind the scenes on Star Wars. A lot of it was watching my favorite performers for Muppets and animation and Mel Blanc and all these, you know, all these Warner Brothers characters. You are despicable. The last time I worked with someone with a speech impediment, and just wait for it. Come on, Betty, let's go. And from Thugatash, you're despicable. Come along, Sylvester. Put the Tweety Bird down. Detroit Fruit. Come on, Betty, let's go. Gee, Yogi, don't tell Ranger Smith about the picnic basket. Hey, I don't want me to scare. Just me, your favorite bear.
It never ends.
It never ends.
But I taught myself how to perform character voices by watching these people and figuring it out. People who I thought were great. Bit by bit, I started working in voice work. So I became a voice guy. I put a showreel together for myself using the sound design skills I got and started getting interest, you know, in what I do. And actually, the first bunch of showreels I sent out to people, I sent 10 showreels out because I kind of thought if 1 in 10 people get in touch with me, I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
So 10 showreels out. I got 13 responses. It went cassette viral. And the reason was it was funny, you know, and it also sounded technically good. The best response I got back, this is just before Star Wars, was from Cartoon Network. And they said, thank you for reaching out to us. We've never heard of you. We have no need for you. We have to meet you.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went down and they were very gracious and I spent about an hour with them. And then nothing really happened for a year. And then about a year later, I started doing quite a lot with them for their promos and, you know, stuff for the channel and Johnny Bravo for about 2.5 years. I became him for the UK and there's a lot. And then just after doing Chicken Run in the late 90s, just at the start of me doing this, I ended up being involved in Chicken Run. And I was like, they'd finished the main recordings of the character voices, but they needed clucks. So I ended up being like a phantom clucker. So, and in the cast, here's the thing too, because you just before the Star Wars thing, you go, how did you get it? Well, with the Chicken Run thing, you kind of go, well, I had to send in a showreel of me clucking. And but to make it interesting, I did like all kinds of different styles of clucks, like waking up cluck, a stretch, you know, just strutting down the street cluck, being frightened that Mrs. Tweedy is about to come and get you. And then that kind of happened. And then people started trusting that I could do stuff for them. And I got a phone call out the blue. I got a phone call out the blue saying, are you free to meet with the casting director of a new Star Wars film on Tuesday? I said, let me check my diary. Yes.
That's the only answer. You cannot give another answer.
Yes, it's yes. Because I'm a massive Star Wars fan. As a kid, huge Star Wars fan. And you know, think it had been 16 years since Return of the Jedi. So it's not like now where Star Wars is everywhere.
Oh, yeah. The wait was terribly long.
Yeah. So I was so excited. And I was invited to go down and meet the casting director in a hotel room. And it was like a secret recording process. And you were literally given a page that said, like, you know, posh politician, evil, creepy guy, you know, storeholder, things like that. And then literally just a few lines. And they'd say, can you, I want you to perform that sounding like a posh British, you know, general or like a creepy guy from the South or from Australia or a different part of the world. And I gave them a bunch of versions and you didn't know who you're actually auditioning for. But luckily they liked what I did and I was invited back to performed these characters for them. It was two characters. There were a couple of lines for a guy called Tay Howe.
Oh, yeah, that's something I wanted to ask about because I read that you sort of shared the credit with one of George Lucas's daughters.
Tiger, yeah. So what happened, I recorded the character voice of this.
It's the guy that says,
sir, they've gone up the ventilation shaft.
They've gone up the ventilation shaft, sir. Yeah, that. And so then she's now the voice of it, so great. But there are two syllables that they left in about two-thirds of the way through, and you hear me go, yes, sir!
Yes, sir!
And they go, I know that's me. That's me. I know it's me. So I'm still the voice of that.
Okay.
Uncredited, but I know I'm the voice of it.
That's a perfect video reel material for you. This is my showreel.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes. If you need a guy to say, yes, sir. Or also, I'm pretty flexible. So if you need a guy to go, no, sir, I can do that too. But then the one that's kind of become quite a thing is this character called Axe Mo.
Yeah.
So he is the ambassador of Malastare. So when you see the Senate scene and they're all floating around in those pods and they're all looking, you know, completely beautiful. And there's a guy, when you see the guy with a goat head and three eyes
yes.
and a desperate need for moisturizer,
This is a detriment to me as a Star Wars fan, because 10 years ago I would have known what race he was. I know there's a second race on that planet, the Duggs. Like Sebulba is a Dugg pod racer.
Oh, hang on, you were really good, aren't you?
Yeah, I were.
You were actually really good.
I was. I'm not good anymore, but yeah, and I know that the two races compete and they don't like each other, and that's all I remember. But
Well, hang on a second. Let's just think here. So to win the fridge, it's a word that begins with an N. Once again, to win the fridge, the race is a word that begins with an N. It's Neimoidian. Neimoidian.
No, the Tai Hao is a Neimoidian.
Like I said, Tai Hao is a Neimoidian.
Yeah, the Trade Federation guys, they're the Neimoidians.
I'm going to say, did I work in Star Wars? I think I'll have to check. But when that scene happens, he's going to look it up now. We need to just check. What do I do for a living? We're just going to check, please.
Gran.
Grand Senator. Yeah, he's a Grand. Grandma Agsmo. So when he gets to the Senate scene, when you hear,
"The Congress of Malastare concurs with the Honorable Delegate from the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed."
Now take me to Poznan.
You improvise the last part. Come on.
I think you'll find that's the actual line. That's exactly it.
How many times have you had to repeat the line?
Had to or wanted to?
I mean, both. You choose.
Many, many, many. And good for both. In fact, what happened, that I was so excited to go there. I mean, you just would be, you know. It's Star Wars. I'm a big fan, and I love George Lucas, and it's dream come true stuff. So it was recorded at Abbey Road Studios. It's the Beatles studio.
Oh, yeah.
It's where they record the scores from. And I went over that famous crossing.
Was that in your contract? Like, I'm going to do it, but I'm only going to do it if you take me to Abbey Road Studio.
And if I walk over the crossing, everything else, no, but the crossing was the only thing that was in the contract, yeah. So I do that. I walk into the lobby and I say, "Hello, it's Mark Silk for George Lucas." And the lady said, "Oh, of course, sir. He's expecting you. Please take a seat." And you go, "Of course he's expecting me."
Yeah, I mean,
But then what happened was, I then sit on the sofa and have a silent panic attack because you kind of go, "What am I doing here?" I mean, I'm exaggerating, but it's the last time I ever remember feeling nervous. And then after about 20 seconds, I thought, no, hang on, the reason I'm there is because they heard something they like.
They want you there.
Yeah. And I had to accept that. And then they took me upstairs and I went up to the penthouse studio. They recorded at the penthouse studio. And they said, "If you just go in and just, we're just going to take five. If you just go in and make yourself comfortable." And I thought, like in here, you're going to walk in, just take a seat and just compose yourself and you're all nice and ready until they come back. And what I didn't realize was there was one person in the room, and it was George Lucas. And you kind of go, "What?" Because, okay. And you know yourself, if you meet someone that you really like, just someone that you admire,
your voice gets an octave higher.
"Hi, George. How are you? Oh, my God. Nice to see you. I think you're amazing. I love everything you've done. You've inspired me."
And, of course, the truth is actually you kind of did. He means a lot to me. His work means a lot to me. And he's a big part of what I love. Anyway, so I walk in and he's there. And here's the great bit. He looks just like George Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
The whole kit. But he was such a cool guy. And he said hi. And his first actual sentence to me was, "Would you like a potato chip?"
That's a very good way to introduce yourself. I mean, it shortens the distance. "He's one of us. He eats chips. Come on.
But the real question is, did you try the potato chip?
I did not. Because I said to him, "Actually, George, thank you for the offer. I will not, because it could make me crunchy during the recording session." And then internally I'm thinking, I should have taken the potato chip and put it in a bell jar and waited until they invent eBay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And but, if you got him to sign it as well, that would have been...
But here's the other thing. When I did the... When you give some level to make sure the level of the microphone is correct, I was just trying to do something just to get my the confidence of, it was such a big deal to me, and this is quite early on in my career, but it just is, And I'm the first thing that I did was, just to get sound out, I performed the line as Sylvester the Cat. I don't know, just to try and make them laugh, but also just to make sound happen from my face.
Yeah. Yes.
So they said, "Can you just give us the line for level, please?" So I just went, Thufrin Thugatash, the Congress of Malastare concur with the right honorable delegate for the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed. That is a lore. You're despicable. And they giggled, and then I heard, okay, that's cool. Can we have it as we ask, please? And you kind of go, okay, so that.
That's a serious business.
Yeah, but I'm actually kind of surprised that he was there at all. Like, the level of supervision from him is outstanding. I mean, it must be true what they said, that he was, like, obsessing about every little detail of the thing.
Yeah, he really did care. And it was an absolute treat to be directed by him. Also, this wouldn't happen now. They wouldn't allow this to happen now. I took my little mini DV camcorder in with me.
Oh.
And I thought, well, because, you know, it meant so much to me. I thought, this happens once in your life. So I thought, if there's any chance of recording anything, I'd love to. So I have on video a little bit behind the scenes of George Lucas and me talking about potato chips.
Very good.
Now you're too afraid to publish it anyway, right?
But the thing that was great, he was genuinely interested in the technology of the camcorder because it was a digital camera.
Yeah, yeah, and he was a pioneer at the time of using digital cameras for filming and, yeah.
The first.
That's why it looks so bad.
Well, if you hear the stories of the making of Phantom Menace,
yeah,
it is absolutely fascinating. There's the documentary. Oh, what's the documentary called? Is it These Amazing Stories? There's a documentary with Keanu Reeves where they talk about the history of film and then digital photography and the innovation of that movie, switching to digital, all the problems they had with that. But of course, it's that innovation and the genius of saying, we need to change this and make it better.
Somebody has to go first.
Yeah. And it was terrific. So, he looked at the camcorder and he went, is that 8mm? And because he was genuinely interested. And how lovely that he was just generous enough to just be interested and just play, you know. But he was a lovely man.
I mean, that was the first Star Wars movie in a decade and a half.
Yep.
So that's why maybe he was so hands-on with everything. Maybe later he delegated. Maybe that was, you know, once in a lifetime, as you said, opportunity,
and he seized it. I don't think he did. I think he took all the three episodes he did, and he was like, this is my vision. This is how it's going to look. And I don't care if people don't like it, actually.
And then he thought that in 2012 the world was going to end, so I'm just going to sell.
Okay, but back to that moment. It is well known that George is a great visionary and everything,
sure. But
he is not that great with dialogue and with directing actors. But how did he do with voice actor in that case, you?
For me, it was interesting because we did The Line, and it was kind of tricky technically because they'd already filmed the animatronic. So you had the actual animatronic creature and a guide track of a guy going, the Congress of Malastare concur with the right honourable delegate for the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed. That is the law. And so I've got to fit those lip flaps.
Yep.
So, of course, as an actor, you've got your idea of how you want that performance to sound, which was probably slower, really. Mm. Just a little bit slower. Because when you hear in the film, it's, the Congress of Malastare concur with the right honourable delegate for the Trade Federation. It must be appointed. That would be Poznan. It's that. So it was a bit of a, you know, you could trip over yourself quite quickly. But so I started off with, like, the Congress of Malastare concur with the right honourable delegate for the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed. That is the law. And then they kind of looked at each other, and I heard, okay, that's great. Can we try one more?
Higher.
So the Congress of Malastare concur with the right honourable delegate for the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed. That is the law. Okay, that's great. I like that. We can use that. Make a note of that one, please. Let's try next one. Just a little higher. So then we go, Congress of Malastare concur with the right honourable delegate for the Trade Federation. That is the law. Okay, now I like that. I think that's the one. We just mark that, please. That could be a keeper. Actually, I got an idea. Can we just try one more?
Higher.
Can we try this one, though? Higher. And then we went, the Congress of Malastare concur with the right honourable delegate for the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed. That is the law. And then that is it. That's a really good fit. Good fit, good for timing, good for the... Yeah, it's good for visuals too. That's great. And just to throw it out there, just a wild one. Can we just try one more, please? Try it like higher. And I said, higher. Yeah. I said, you sure? And they smiled. And then I kind of thought, oh God, I just questioned, you know? And I think the one you hear in the film might be that final one, which is, The Congress of Malastare concur with the right to Honourable Delegate for the Trade Federation. A commission must be appointed. That is the law.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Hubert.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I mean, there's technology that can do that. They can speed it up or make it higher or whatever.
And you can make it what?
Higher.
Yes, and they chose to go old school, make the actor do it.
Yeah, but it is that. It's kind of, you want to hear it like naturally. I mean, for all the, you know, all the funnies and things, you kind of go, you want it to be authentic, whatever that means for that character. You know, and like, you know, if you're watching a cartoon, you create the environment and you stay true to that the whole way. You know, when you're watching Star Wars, you don't question. You know, look at any of the original trilogy, the very first, you know, 4, 5, and 6. You don't question where it is or, hang on, that robot's talking or Jabba or any of these other things or the cantina scene. They couldn't exist. Yeah, they do. They're real. It's Star Wars. They created this incredible world committed to, and you just buy into it and just want more and more. And me, you've seen the making of Star Wars. You've watched those stuff.
Yeah, probably most of them, yeah.
There was a video library, a VHS library, like 5 minutes over the road from where I lived as a kid with mom and dad. And I hired that like so many times. It must have been a dozen times. And just watched it again and again and again and again and again. And I was in love with every element of that film. So everything from Ben Burtt's sound design, where you see him creating the sound of the laser swords, the lightsabers.
Yeah.
When you hear Ben Burtt show how he created the sound of the laser guns by hitting a tightened wire, like a guy wire. He bumped into, Ben Burtt was on a walk in the country somewhere, accidentally like hit a wire, and he went, and he went, oh my God, that's a laser gun. So he came back with a recorder and a spanner and started hitting in different places, and he goes, and that's how he recorded the sound of that thing. And so that to me was magic, because you're creating this iconic sound from nothing. And then you have John Williams orchestrations. You know, without that score, it isn't Star Wars.
Oh, of course. It's like the staple element of this whole thing.
Yeah. And you know what? Even as a little thing, because I host these Star Wars symphonies now.
We were about to ask you about it as well, yeah.
And when you hear, even before you get to John Williams' score.
Oh, when you hear the 20th Century Fox thing. It's immediately.
It's Star Wars. Immediately.
You feel strange when a different music comes in later. It's just not right. It's similar for me to the HBO intro, because I'm so used to hearing this
yep.
And then the Sopranos music. That's the only thing for me. Any other show, it just doesn't work. Yep. And it's the same with this thing.
Well, I went to for Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace, I was invited to go to the cast and crew showing in, well, Odeon Leicester Square, and it was so thrilling. And you know, there's people that you recognise there, and Rick McCallum, he was there. Mm. He introduced it, and he said, "I'm sorry, George couldn't make it. He's just busy finishing up a few little bits and pieces." But he thanked us for our contribution, and then the movie started. And then to see this thing happen, you know, in front of our eyes for the first time, it was such a thrill. And then I saw it again, quite a few times, at local cinemas back home. And the first time I saw it back home, a bunch of friends all came. And there were about, like, you know, I don't know, six of us all in the middle of this row. And now, bearing in mind, my role is small.
Yeah.
It is. But I'm in Star Wars. You know, so it's big. So there's all this stuff going on and people making speeches. And my speech comes on, which is kind of important, but it's not like a thrill ride roller coaster moment.
Yeah, but it's an important plot point.
It's an important plot point. So the whole auditorium is kind of quiet. And then you hear the Congress of Malastare, that is a lot. And then like six people in the middle of the thing go, yeah!
It's like with kids now that are, you know, reacting to memes or whatever during Minecraft. And
yeah,
now
the chicken jockey scene, yeah, something like that.
Chicken jockey.
You had the chicken jockey moment of yourself.
Yeah. But it was so exciting just to be part of that. I mean, there's a thing I find myself saying more and more, which is actually what I really love is being in the room. You know, because just to be in the room with those people, to be in the room at Abbey Road Studios with the guys from Skywalker Sound and engineers from Abbey Road Studios and George Lucas working on Star Wars. And then that's led to me working on these Star Wars symphonies. You kind of go, how just to be in that room is, it's such a privilege and so much fun. It's incredible.
We're not envious at all.
No.
Not but, a tiny little bit, man.
But my, you were going to ask about the Star Wars Symphony, so let me answer the question you were going to ask.
I like how every good guest should anticipate questions. That's really good.
No. The question is going to be now about, have you had like a flash of, let's say, premonition that this small role, this line would give you so much mileage and you would be repeating it for years to come and, you know, go to conventions and festivals.
You never think that.
But with Star Wars, you kind of could, you know, it was the biggest thing back then, right?
Yeah,
and all the toys and everything. Do you have a Axmo action figure?
I have a life-size figure of him that was custom-made for myself.
We saw the head.
It stands in my kitchen and operates the coffee machine. It's completely unnecessary and absolutely essential.
Of course, you got to have it. I mean, yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. You say, about, did I ever think it would turn to that? All I was thinking of is, this is just incredible. I'm working with George Lucas on Star Wars. You know that, just by the nature of it, you know that you're part of something important and big and exciting. And as a fan, I know what it meant to me. In fact, there was I was in the city with my mom a week or so before the film was being released, 1-2 weeks before, and there were two things that happened, which were kind of a sign that maybe something interesting was going on. So I was in this bookshop, and they had the book of, you know, Phantom Menace ready to go. This is before the film came out, so there were a few spoilers.
Oh, wow. Speaking of spoilers, do you remember when the soundtrack came out?
Yep.
And one of the song titles was Qui-Gon's Noble End?
Yeah.
Jesus, that was before the premiere.
Yeah, well, that's like for the first time round, you know, on the CD, on the vinyl, one of the titles is called Darth Vader's Your Dad. You know, it doesn't really help.
Exactly like that, yeah.
But I was in this bookshop and I bought like half a dozen of these books because, you know, my name's there in the credits. So I'm very excited. And so I'm going to pay for these books. And the guys behind the counter were talking about, when's the film out? What's the date of the actual release? And there was posters there. It was a big thing. You know, it was a huge promotion. And so I just picked up these books and I took them there. I could hear them arguing over what date it was. And then they came over to me and I went, actually, I said, you were right, it is that. And he went, no, it's the other one. I said, no, what he said is actually right. And they were like, yeah, like, you know.
And then you take out your calling business card and go,
no, then he took
check
out,
it out.
No, then he took out his video camera and he showed them the George Lucas video.
Well, the thing is, like, I really do love sharing what I do. At the same time, I'm not going to go around going, don't you know who I think I am? I'm the voice of that carpet commercial, you know. But so anyway, the guy went, oh, yeah, like, you know. And then my mom was there and she laughed and she went, he's in the film.
That's always the best way, is have someone tell that for you.
Yeah. And I said, and he went, and he looked at me and he went, no, you're not. I said, okay, then. He said, what, are you? I said, well, I thought it was, but you just told me I'm not, so I can't be. If you tell me I'm not, I can't be. He went, but are you really? And then mum's nodding. And I opened the back page because it was one of those things you just kind of like, you want to share it, but also don't. Anyway, I opened the back page and my name's there. And he went, well, I don't know, that's you. And so then I gave him the credit card and he went, oh, Jesus. and then like they kind of like got excited then and also realized they kind of blown it by telling me how I didn't know anything and now I'm not in it. And
is he your best friend now?
Well, thank you very much. I said, I will go now and enjoy not being in the film. But then the other thing was, we were at this, like a gift shop, say, a jewelry shop for my mom's earrings. We went in there and someone had overheard me in another shop where somehow they knew, they'd heard my name in an interview and knew I was in Star Wars. And that person worked in this jewelry shop. So we'd gone for a sandwich. That person overheard someone else talk about me. They went back to this jewelry shop. We head to this jewelry shop again to pick up this jewelry for my mom. And there's like 30 people all standing in this jewelry shop waiting for me to go back in there, excited that this guy from Star Wars is there. And it was just very funny and an indicator. This was an indicator that something had changed. the spin-offs, the trust and the excitement of where that's taken me. You know, I host these Star Wars symphonies now at the Royal Albert Hall and in other places. I've hosted four of them now. I'm a huge fan of John Williams. I'm a huge fan of, you know, I've got such admiration for his work and just what that has done to help tell that story of Star Wars along, you know, throughout my life. He's the soundtrack to our lives. John Williams, that's who he is. And I know now to find myself as the guy that does that is quite an incredible thing to be part of. You know, I started off as the guy with keeping my head down, making stuff, not wanting people to look at me because, you know, you're just finding your confidence when you start out. And now the actual shows, it's the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra and me live at the Royal Albert Hall. And each audience is 5,000 people. And for each of these shows, the demand for tickets is usually so big that we completely sell out of the first one and have to put a second show on in the afternoon. And something else that's incredible, the last time we did it, as a spontaneous moment, just before the last tune, I looked up and I saw my mom in the best seats in the house.
VIP booth.
Yeah, in this box with my family and friends. And I just turned to the audience spontaneously and said, I have to share something special with you. We have a VIP in the audience with us tonight. And the whole Royal Albert Hall...
thought George Lucas was there.
They did that face. They did that face.
Who is that?
Who is that? And I said to them, please help me say thank you to the lady who introduced me to the world of Star Wars. Please help me say thank you to my mom, Anne Silk. She's up there. And the whole room did two noises. The first one was, 5,000 people went, Then went, way! And gave my mom like, you know, 20, 25 seconds of applause. And fast as anything, the lighting guys put a spotlight on my mom. Oh. And she's there waving to 5,000
people. Like queen.
The queen. It was spectacular.
Oh, no, that's a moment to remember.
I mean, come on. There are like 27 moments to remember during all this.
Yeah, of course. So one more thing we have to ask you about Star Wars.
Actually, I'm going to jump in. That's a great title for a podcast. 27 moments to remember.
But that's like a life coaching podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. We're as far away as possible from coaching podcasts.
In a podcast far, far away.
Yeah, but...
that's another one. Stop making up names.
So working on Phantom Menace was great for you. How was watching Phantom Menace for you? Because as we know, back then, you know, the expectations were this is going to be the best thing ever made. And then the movie came out and some of the people did not quite enjoy it as much as they thought they would. So
it became better over the years.
It was the greatest movie ever made. It was. Well, here's the thing.
It's difficult to say it with a straight face, right?
It's the greatest film ever made. Obviously, the fact I'm in the film and it's the first Star Wars film in 16 years. There's a lot of love in the room, you know. So literally, like for the first little while, you could do anything and you'd just be cheering it on. Do you know what? I actually really enjoyed it. I took it for what it was. It's a totally different thing for a whole new audience. And also, of course, I was just so excited just to see the thing. So excited. And I actually really enjoyed it for what it was, taking us into this new world. And actually, the pod racer scene, I just thought was stunning.
Oh, that was...
Oh, it still is.
And I love the whole behind-the-scenes stories as well. Like, in the audience, a lot of the audience in that pod racer scene are cotton buds.
I saw the thing, there was an exhibition in Paris, I think, with all the props, and I saw the real props of the audience with the cotton buds. That was great. Yeah.
You went to the Cotton Buds Museum?
Exactly, yeah. There was a special Star Wars exhibition at the Cotton Buds Museum in Paris.
It's a very niche museum.
Yeah.
Here are different films across the ages featuring cotton buds.
But I mean, you don't have to convince us. We're very much into episode one and we were at that time as well. I thought it was great. I even wrote as a teenager a fluff piece about the whole thing, and now it sounds so stupid, but I was so excited to finally see it, and it didn't disappoint at all. So I don't know where the hate comes from. And people, after 20 years, are like coming around, right, about the whole thing.
And you know, when I was recording my stuff at Abbey Road Studios, there was a guy, I actually had to wait about an hour once I was upstairs at Abbey Road. There was a guy recording dialogue before me. I didn't know who it was, but it was this very kind of like hyper kind of character, I think. And then I didn't really meet him other than saying hi. He went hi, and then he... And as far as I know, it was Ahmed Best. It was Jar Jar Binks.
Oh.
I am pretty certain that the guy that walked past me was Ahmed Best at Abbey Road, right? And if you think of all the stuff that he's been through,
That's terrible. Like him and Jake Lloyd. Oh my God, got destroyed.
And the guy's an incredible human being.
Yeah.
And I met him at a Comic-Con that we were both signing at a few years ago. And he's the sweetest guy in the room. And we have something. We have something else in common. We both have a Star Wars pinball machine.
Oh, right.
So in the same film, both have Star Wars pinball machines.
Yeah, speaking of pinball machines, you have quite a collection.
Nice segue to just finish about Star Wars and just go.
I mean, I could go on for one more hour at least, but we should talk about
Star Balls.
So let's move to pinball. That's an important subject, I think, to talk about.
Just for a bit. I mean, you play with yourself, right?
Brings a whole new meaning to that,
yeah.
Right? Yes.
You're naughty.
I've always been a massive gamer. As a kid, I had my very first computer was a BBC Micro back in the early 1980s.
I don't even know what that is.
That's because you have a life.
No, that's because we had Soviet computers back then.
Of course, made from concrete.
Yeah,
asbestos.
Concrete and nails. I think mine was concrete and nails as well. But this was like just before the Commodore 64, around that kind of time. But so I started like doing bedroom coding and things.
Ooh.
But then my mom and dad would take us to the seaside, and I was just in love with the arcades and the graphics but not more than just the games. It was like, who is making these? You know, every time we went, there were new games, new sound, like new things you could do technically with audio, new character designs, the improvement in graphics. So there was the love of the games, but also the love of the tech as well, like Star Wars. You know, you love the movies, but my God, look at how they made it.
Exactly.
And so, big fan of this. I had all the consoles, all of that stuff. And then, of course, consoles came out, arcades closed. Because everyone's playing at home with themselves. And so the other thing that I loved at arcades was pinball machines. And then, of course, you never saw these anywhere because everything's now kind of like on a console, or it was. And then about a decade ago, barcades kind of started popping up, and you saw these restored machines again and new machines, you know, from, you know, big giants of industry that make these in the States and around the world. And so about 10 years ago, I kind of rediscovered my love for pinball machines and arcade machines. And I started following these podcasts. And every now and then, I'd just send a message saying, oh, you know, great show. I love that bit where the Star Wars thing happened, or the, you know, where you got to the multi-ball on here. As a fan, I didn't say what I did. I was just a fan listening to the podcast. You know, you must get that all the time. And so I saw they were doing a pinball expo in Chicago. And I thought, you know what? I'm jumping on a plane. I'm going to go. So I went out there as a fan, and I wanted to meet the designers and the engineers and the you know, the graphics guys and sound guys, and just have a chance to like just to be immersed in all the fun of it all. And this guy came up to me while I was there and said, you know, can I interview you, just ask you a few questions about what you think about the show? And I recognized him he was someone that I listened to. And he went, my name's Jeff. And I said, oh, hi, I'm Mark. And he went, we know who you are.
Oh.
We know who you are.
You won't hide from us.
Yeah. And then I ended up getting introduced to a whole bunch of people within these companies. And I work with them. So I'm now the voice of 6 pinball machines. So not long after, I ended up getting cast by a company out there and Nickelodeon to be the voice of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pinball machine. So Nickelodeon cleared it, and then they cleared it. And so you hear me as Bebop and Rocksteady. I'll get you, Turtles. And
Turtles.
Yeah, I'll get you, Turtles. And Master Shredder, they're coming to get you. Oh, my goodness. Baxter and Baxter Fly. And I also got to be the voice of the guy that goes, and that is how they became the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Splinter. Yes.
So I worked on that. Then there were two other, like, there was one called Funhouse, another one called Whirlwind. Then I ended up working on the Labyrinth pinball machine.
Oh.
I'm a huge Hanson fan. So you start doing all these, wow, this is really creepy. What are you looking at? You know, these creepy, dopey characters talking like this. It's you start playing properly now. And then from that, I ended up working on a game called Portal. There was the classic game from about 15 years ago. This is now a Portal pinball machine.
We love the game.
I know what Pinball Santa needs to bring you. Portal pinball is stunning. So Portal pinball is, if you imagine the world of Portal, except brought to life in the real world. So the first like two-thirds of the game, from like your chest upwards on the pinball machine, our screen, but with an actual ball thrown all over this thing with massive energy. So you've got the screen and the animation of you falling through the elevator and all this stuff going on in the world of Portal. Then the top third is actual physical Portal. Portal in the real world.
All right.
With all the stuff happening, engineered. The mechanics in it are absolutely astonishing. So you got screen, virtual, real, mechanics, wireforms, actual pinballs. The whole thing is incredible. Then there's the actual screen in front of you giving more stuff. GLaDOS is back, the voice of GLaDOS. She's there being terrifying as always. And I'm a new character called Reggie. I'm your kind of guy that's your psychic that takes you through the whole thing of Portal. Whew, that was close. Things like that. And it's a little kind of like sphere character that actually moves around physically, but he's got a screen in the circle. The take on it, it's incredible. And then not around the same time, I also got cast in the Harry Potter pinball machine, which is a huge thing to be part of.
You're British, so come on. First Star Wars, then Harry Potter.
Hey, I'm from Britain. What are you talking about? Come on now.
You just skipped Lord of the Rings and you would be done.
Hey, that's a nice castle you got there. What's going on? Yeah, bibbidi bobbidi boo.
But the pinballs were later than doing voice for video games.
Yeah.
Right? That came before because...
Yeah.
And when looking at your credits, I don't know if there's more video games than like TV stuff, because you are in a lot of video games.
There's probably more.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of games. There's I have done many, many games over the years, Master. Yeah. There's a fantastic game. I think probably the first really big one I ever did was called Black and White.
Oh, we love that game.
It's one of our favorites. I actually had a phase in high school, and this is stupid, but I actually did it. When I, you know how you navigated in the game with a hand, like you move the world with your hand?
Yeah.
That's how I did it for a time. I was walking around doing like, I played it so
himself.
Much. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I am. I
remember from school, who were going...
And I remember us having very serious conversations about which pet was the better one, the turtle or the cow.
Yeah.
Because they were the only two options that were like viable choices.
Hubert?
Are you more a turtle guy or a cow guy?
I'm more of a Hubert guy. Right. So on behalf of the voice of good and evil and Black and White, we say thank you, Hubert, for being slightly freakish.
Yes,
be nice, Master. I'll throw him in the river. He'll grow a new one.
That was 25 years ago, right? It was 2001, I'm not mistaken.
It was so big. It won so many awards. And I remember that was the first time I was in another country. I was in Orlando not long after it came out. And I saw Black and White at a store there and the making of book. And to have that with me in it, and it was just a thrill, because it's like, you've made it, kid. I felt like that had happened, because it's a physical thing.
Exactly.
It was a huge thing. Just, and the writing was fantastic. And the music was good, too. The music was pretty astonishing by Russell Shaw. And James Leach, the writer, was wonderful to work with. And I was actually with two of the people were part of that game. They're the people behind 2 Point Studios. So, by the way, Black and White, I'm the voice of, I think it's just over 30 characters on Black and White. The main two are the voice of good and evil. Those guys, good guy, bad guy. Those guys, your consciences.
But you are also all the villagers, right?
All the villagers! Quick, over here! Quick, master! Save us!
No! No! Oh, please save me!
No, you've sought yourself out, you time waster. Master.
I fed so many of you to my cow and to my turtle. You can't even imagine.
That explains a lot. I wondered where I got that bad neck from.
How much of these lines were written and how much of them you could improvise on the spot they used them?
Yeah, they were all written. I mean, when you've got something that is such a beast of a game, you've got to have some kind of focus. We did play, during that. And there are quite a few outtakes that I have uploaded to YouTube. So if you type in black and white outtakes, you hear all the stuff they wouldn't let you hear in the first place.
Nice. Oh, dear master, must we?
Yes, we must. It's time to be naughty.
Yeah.
Those guys. So that's out there. And then there was like everybody's golf, and there was Buzz Master Quiz, and got Hogs of War with an amazing British comedian called Rick Mayall. He was just so funny. He was a British TV legend called The Young Ones.
I'm quite partial to medieval, but you were only in the sequel, right?
Medieval. I'm in all of them.
In the first one as well.
Yes,
oh, perfect.
Master.
I spent a lot of time.
Oh no, hang on, no. Yes, you're right.
Yes, I'm right.
Can we talk about? Thank you for giving me accuracy on my own career. Yes. Well, that's what I did.
When I saw Sir Daniel Fortescue, I was. Wow.
Sir Daniel Fortescue. Yeah. So I'm Sir Daniel Fortescue in Medieval too, and also have. Did you play Overlord?
I tried the first one, but it was once upon a time. I was a massive fan of Dungeon
Keeper.
Dungeon Keeper and all those godlike Sims, and whatever Peter Molyneux was up to. I was like, that's why Black and White came up. But then I don't know, it kind of got stale, or for me at least. Yeah. And I
the voicing in the game was terrible. He couldn't take it.
I just played it on mute. But still, I did that because that was kind of a fun twist on the thing, just being evil, but in a kind of Monty Python world.
Evil will always find a way. Well, the do you know Terry Pratchett, the author?
Come on,
of course. Well, his daughter is Rhianna Pratchett, and she is a prolific games author in her own right. She just happens to be Terry Pratchett's daughter. And we became friends through that. And she wrote the dialogue for Overlord and Overlord 2 and all of that stuff. And we had so much fun working on that. She's a total genius of a wordsmith. So she was pretty astonishing. But you mentioned Peter Molyneux. I was at a festival a few months ago. And
because you're in Masters of Albion right now, right? So
that's like the black and white.
It's leading up to that.
Masters of Albion. You're the first person I've talked about this.
Ooh, excellent.
Yeah. So Masters of Albion, I got a call about working on that. But I think this was this before or after, around the same time? I was at the Guildford Gaming Festival in Guildford a few months ago. And the guys from 2 Point Studios were there. The people who have done 2 Point Hospital, 2 Point Campus, 2 Point Museum. And they worked on Black and White and Theme Hospital. And the keynote speaker was Peter Molyneux. And of course, they all worked together. We all worked together. I haven't seen Peter in 26 years. And so he comes in, and I was over the moon to see him. And I'm just standing there with a coffee. I didn't say a word. And so they say hi. And then the guys from 2 Point, they turned to Peter. They said, do you recognize Mark, Peter? He went, no. And they went, go on, do it. And I went, hello, Peter, from the voice of good and evil. Where have you been all this time? I've missed you, buddy. And he went, oh, my God. And then then we're back again, It's funny how things like that can get you back in the zone, like, fast. But, I mean, he's a, gaming ledge, total gaming legend.
I mean, he doesn't have to do anything right now, but he does. Apparently, the Masters of Albion thing is not really excellent yet because it's in early access and they got some polishing to do, but still the thing of being able to, command your villagers and then just go into the dude, however that sounds, and go and fight the monsters.
That doesn't sound well. I must admit, that doesn't sound well.
What he actually meant was they have some polishing to do.
Oh, yes.
It's felt the same.
Of course.
But it's quite interesting that even after all these years, if something new of Peter Molyneux comes out, you get excited. all of a sudden. Right?
I mean, he's the George Lucas of that genre.
Yeah, there are certain figures in gaming, and he's absolutely one of them. And I'm over the moon to be part of that.
Have you played Theme Hospital before you did Two Point?
Oh, back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, because it's like it's an iconic game. You couldn't escape it. You wouldn't want to escape it unless something happens in the hospital. Then you really want to escape it. It's like with like with Two Point Hospital. You know, my favorite comedy illness that you can have in there, it was a mock star where everyone's going around strutting and looks like Freddie Mercury. and then, I mean, when we worked on Two Point Hospital, the first Two Point game, and the first one I worked on, we created the voices of the DJs for the presenters for the radio station. So while you're playing the game, there's a radio station that's like doing its thing. And it's very ridiculous. When you're playing the game, there's a radio station behind you that's doing its stuff, and there are three radio presenters, and I play those radio presenters.
All three of them.
I actually play more than that, but that's like, you know, you got to start somewhere. So I play all three radio presenters. And so the first one is a very, very happy gentleman called Ricky Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And we needed someone that sounded just perpetually happy about absolutely everything. And that's Ricky Hawthorne for you. So we did I need someone that sounds happy all the time. And I'd been speaking to somebody on hold to do with my internet. And, you know, she was, it had all gone wrong, but the person on the phone was Scottish, and she was lovely and Scottish, and it didn't matter what she said, you know, you just felt happy about absolutely everything. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I can do something with that. So I made him like a Scottish fella, where it doesn't matter what I tell you, it's all gone wrong, and isn't it marvellous? So that's Ricky Hawthorne for you. And then the next guy is Sir Nigel Bickleworth, who's somewhat more educated, and I see everyone other than oneself as abject scum. Yeah, so yes, I like it when he does reviews. You hear, and now, Sir Nigel reviews. It was dreadful. The end.
That's the kind of gig that would be lovely to be heard in, like, GTA.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe Forza Horizon. These are the big games that have radios.
Yeah, and then the other one that I really like is, this guy was like, this guy got so popular, he had his own, like, spin-off pack. A guy called Harrison Wolfe, the conspiracy guy. Mm. He's at night, UFOs, man, the real. I have the evidence, and if I don't have the evidence, I'm going to find it. Yeah. And all the commercials, too, for things like new cheesy gubbins. And also for Two Point, now, was it Two Point? I think it's Two Point Museum. When you're playing Two Point Museum, there is a fake game in the game.
Yeah.
There is a fake game in the game, and the fake game is called Meat Wizard. Yeah, the fake game is called Meat Wizard. And so so you're playing the game, which is a comedy game. Within the game, there's a fake game that is advertised. And I'm doing the fake commercials for the pretend game within the actual game. And so you hear this wonderful, very over-the-top gentleman talking about, I can save you. From the mountains of Reshimon to the hills of Balduith, you can only be saved if you believe in the Meat Wizard! And you kind of go, okay, that's odd. That's somewhat special.
Now, that's a lot of voices, right? And also a lot of accents as well.
So, many accents. But I haven't perfected yours yet. Maybe we can have a chat.
Usually what happens is people try and do Russian, I think. Yeah. And then they...
Is that what you're doing right now?
I wanted to ask you, how easy does it come to you to do all those accents and learn all the different type? Because I noticed when we were at the festival, like, you talk to a person, and after a couple of minutes, you already got a small impression of that person ready, right?
I think, do you know what? It's just, it's like music. And it's just like in conversation. You know, say if you were, okay, as an example of finding different voices or going into different voices, you know, if you were telling a story to a kid or reading a story and you might do the voices of the characters. Hello, said the potato. Hello, said Mr. Pig. Yeah, and you might do the voices like that. And to me, it's just all music. I don't really think of it. I think it's like, if you're, I'm good at what I do within that side of stuff. If you're a good artist, a good musician, a good, you know, chef, a good dancer, it's just kind of in you. You know, it's baked into your creative DNA. And I think that's probably the best way of describing it. It's just me. If I wasn't doing it for a living, I'd be doing it anyway.
You'd be the soul of the party at any time.
You probably still are.
Maybe. I don't know, because I'm quite happy just like chatting in the corner with a coffee, you know.
But that's very British, because maybe in Poland you've already noticed outside of the festival that there's not so many smiling faces. And if there are, they're not from here.
Well, you seem fairly smiley.
Because we've been, you know, rubbing shoulders with all of you guys. So
yeah, and the funny thing,
my pleasure.
The funny thing as well is that when I'm looking at you while you're doing the voices, right?
Yeah,
they don't sound that entirely different to me. But as soon as I don't see your face and I only hear the voice, then they start sounding completely different. Like it's unrecognizable for me.
There was an award show last night, and in the middle, there was this like very serious English person that came across the speakers of the massive auditorium, and it sounded huge. It sounded, you know, deadly serious, and it's me. And I kind of thought, oh, that's me. And we recorded in this room a couple of nights before, and it's me being very, very serious.
You sounded very tall.
You told me I would be recording. You told me I would host these awards, you waste of time. And how dare you?
And that's exactly it. I remember the voice from yesterday, but now I see you while using the same voice, and it sounds completely different. So there's some magic in it. I don't know.
But you know, you've been recording lots of different roles, lots of different stuff. Is there any difference to recording something for a video game versus a TV show or a movie? Or is it just practically the same, preparation period plus...
Preparation period?
Yeah,
you kidding me? Preparation period. Who are we kidding here? It's an important question, actually. It's a clever question, because you kind of go, like, for animation, it's two different disciplines, because in the end, you're bringing characters to life. That's what you're there to do.
Yep.
So, and most of the time, you're creating brand new characters from scratch. So games, films, TV shows, theme parks, commercials.
Pinball machines.
Yeah. When you're creating voices for pinball machines, it's important that they sound absolutely marvelous. But the discipline of recording them for, say, games is very different to animation. So with animation, you're probably recording, big scenes at a time. Big chunks, conversation. And also with animation, you've got a story locked in. You might say it's like a 10-minute story. Beginning, middle, end.
Yep.
With a game, you're recording every single permutation of what can happen in that game. So when we did Black and White, literally the last week of recording, they booked me into a studio for a week at EA Games HQ. And we recorded like from 9:30 to 6 every day, like a Wikipedia of script across this week. And literally it's like, open the door. Oh, I can't open this door. What's with the door? I'll try another door. Oh, that I need to go through that door. I need a key. Need a key to the door. Where's the key? You need a key to that door. A different key. Wrong key. Find another key. Ooh, you found the key. Uh-oh, squeaky door. You need to open the door silently. Right then. Oh, you're through the door. Oh, you locked out. And you have to record every single permutation for that thing. And also, you're having to create a character voice where you want to stay in the company of that character. Because sometimes you'll play a game and you'll hear repetition. Where it's the same thing.
It takes you out.
Yep. When you hear it again and again and again, you now listen, you go, oh, I'm just hearing a sound file played again, again, again. And what you want is to sound like, you want to feel like that person's in with you and you're spending time in their company. You know, sometimes you watch a TV show or a film and at the end you'll go, what happened in that episode? And you go, oh, I know, nothing. But you enjoyed it because the characters are so great. You're just happy to spend time in their company. And that's really what it is that we're doing. We're creating character voices and performances that are hopefully memorable, that make you want to stay and play.
But with games, it might also be difficult because you don't have the continuity of sorts.
Yeah.
Like you record separate lines and you have to keep the consistency of the voice.
Yep.
But then you don't have the... one piece goes into the other. You just have to do it all separately because you don't know the order in which it will play out in the game, actually.
Yeah, and that's where you realize this is a big team thing. So you need a great writer, you need a good director, a good engineer, and then a performer that can maintain that character throughout the breadth of how long you're recording for. And even it might be that you come back, you know, a year later to record some more lines and for the same scene. And they've just changed like a sentence in the middle of that one paragraph and you've got to make it consistent. So, you know, you need to be able to, it's a performance that you've got to be able to emulate and stay consistent and make it live and breathe.
I mean, that sounds like something we couldn't do. But
as many other things.
As many other things. That's why we leech off the festival and, you know, warm ourselves in the shining of your town.
You don't have to out us so publicly.
I feel the same way about trampolining. I know my place.
In all seriousness, like when you tell somebody at a party, I'm Mark. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm a voice actor. How often the first question is, can you do Schwarzenegger, or can you do Rocky, or can you do this, or can you do that? Like, how much of that is you pretending to be other people, not creating characters?
I don't really. I mean, the best bit that I remember was at a school. I went back to my first ever school, the infant school, and I met my old teacher, and she was there, and it was wonderful. And I spoke to these, you know, preschool kids, and the best question was this kid, little boy put his hand up, and he went, can you do my voice?
and did you?
Hello, I'm John. How you doing? What are you looking at? You a naughty, naughty person doing naughty things. He went, thank you. I don't think John was impressed. But the thing is, really, I don't go around. I'm not an impressionist. I'm not. I can, but I find it much more interesting to be creating new things, you know, and new characters. It'd be like, you know, when you, like, are you musical at all? Do you play any instruments?
Nope.
No.
Oh, good. Okay, then.
Let's talk.
Well, don't have many skills in life.
It's becoming more and more apparent as the day goes on. But I learned the piano when I was like 7 years old. I'm still as good as I was when I was 7 years old. And when you start playing, if you're learning an instrument or learn to dance or paint or do anything creative or act, your only point of reference are your heroes. So, like, you know, say if you want, you know, you pick up a pencil, you know, you're at school, you just start drawing Spider-Man, because, you know, that's all you know. And then over time, you get better and better and better playing other people's work, you know, other people's tunes. And then you might start noodling around and playing your own tunes. And then suddenly you start writing your own songs and you've gone from being the cover band to the band.
Yeah.
You're the band now.
That's a great comparison, actually. Yeah.
But when you are the band, every now and then, you might still play the odd cover tune. And that's kind of exciting. It's like with me. I started out by basically just emulating my heroes, because that's how you kind of understand the vocal techniques of how it works. That's how I learned. You know, like if you're a musician, they'll give you some, you know, Mozart or Billy Joel or whatever it is, because you're playing their tracks to kind of learn. And then eventually I started like just creating my own tracks, my own characters based on like just writing little comedy sketches, or you'd hear someone there you get ideas from all kinds of places. I was in New York with a friend and I'd gone for a coffee. And I was in Washington Square Park, and there were these two golden girls sat down there. And I just wanted a bench to sit down. And I said, may I join you? And she went, yeah, sure. And then she went, look, they're filming a movie. and she went, no, it's a TV show. It's a movie. No, it's it's a TV show. Look, there's a host. And I'm thinking, this is fantastic, you know. And she said to me, what's in the bag? And I said, it's my friend. I said, he's not feeling very well. I've had to get him a thing from the pharmacy. And she looked at me and she said, oh, boy, that can be painful. Taxi drivers, they all have it. It's endemic.
So you are kind of like Ben Burtt. He was walking around the world collecting sounds and recording sounds, but you don't have to record them. You just take the voices and you keep them.
And of course, you embellish them. And it's not, you know, it's an exaggeration or an underplaying of it. But it's so lovely when you hear someone, you go, you're fantastic. I mean, like, there's a scene from Seinfeld where there's Jerry Stiller, who played the dad, and there's a mom, Estelle. well. And you just do this lovely contrast of like sweet and joyful and just fiery and angry about everything. And there's this scene where it just goes, "Hey, George, would you like some Jell-O?" And the dad goes, "Why do you put the bananas in there?" "Because he likes the bananas, so put them on the side." And you go, "What the hell?" It's this fieriness. And you get, what, you know, fantastic contrast of just somebody just so lovely and gentle and this total maniac.
And that's the contrast that we have. We utter a word or two and then an avalanche of stories and, you know, impressions and whatever you do, it's hypnotizing.
It's entirely hypnotizing.
And the funny thing is, I think we only just, you know, reached the tip of the iceberg. Like, there's a million more stories.
Yeah, that's just the tip. Yeah.
Yeah. We only just touched the tip.
And we shall touch something more in a year.
You guys with all your innuendos, come on.
Thank you once again for listening to the Two Tips podcast. Both tips will be back again soon for more tips in life.
That's actually a good name for our podcast.
Maybe. If we transition to doing it only in English, but yeah.
Touching the tip.
Good thing you added the English.
Yeah.
If we transition.
Maybe you will transition. You don't know.
Permission to speak, sir.
Yes, please.
There's something that we haven't addressed yet. Just dear listener, just so you're aware, good friend Hubert is wearing a fantastic t-shirt that says, "Let's find a cure for stupid people." Yes. The world of science.
I really love this shirt. I don't even remember where I got it from. One of the comic book stores somewhere, but where precisely, I don't know.
I gotta get a picture of this. There we are, yeah. I need to get that t-shirt. Continued good luck fighting the course.
Oh yeah, the search for the cure is everlasting.
Yeah, you know, one day we're gonna get Philip the help he needs.
Yeah, my plain t-shirt desperately needs some.
Well, actually, it's just stupid people. So I don't know. Is that all three of us?
Two at least, I think.
Yeah, the listener can judge that.
I mean, Philip is quite smart sometimes.
He is.
But it's getting really hot, and my CPU is overheating.
It is getting hot in here as well. Oh my goodness, I can't believe it. I will have to change another layer. Boom shakalaka laka.
Oh my god, where is Mark? And who's that Bulgarian gentleman?
I don't know, but I feel like it's a reflex thing.
I like to dance. I like to boogie.
You like to move it?
I like to move it. I like so.
We got to pull the plug, man. Mark Silk, thank you so much. And pull it, please.
He's not done yet. Let the man finish.
I will focus enough to make sure that you say what you need to say without me being rude and speaking on top of you.
Say a hearty goodbye.
A hearty goodbye on behalf of the Hubert and the Philip. Goodbye. Take care. We love you.
Koniec.